Hello and welcome to the Forward Unto Dawn podcast, the show about the lore and universe of the Halo franchise. This is episode number 53, recorded March 16th, 2024. I'm David, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, Danny.
Hi, Leo.
Hello, world. I'm Tony. Been a fan of the Halo franchise since day one. Became a little jaded with some of the games over the last couple games through the Reclaimer trilogy, but been a fan of Forward Unto Dawn, I can't say since day one, but I'll say since the beginning, working in the forums, talking with you guys, so it's great to finally be on the podcast. But yeah, happy to be here.
And we've invited you guys on to talk about Halo Epitaph, which released February 27th by Kelly Gay. And this got announced way back in, I think, end of 2022, one of the, I think it was the Halo World Championships, not Outpost Discovery. And yeah, it's the I would say, I'm guessing, final, sort of like how I think Kelly Gay's Point of Light Renegade stuff was sort of the final stuff for Guilty Spark. I think this is sort of nothing set in stone, but sort of the final bit about the Didact, who we had in Halo 4, obviously, as the villain, sort of dropped out after appearing in Escalation. There was definitely concept art and stuff that he was going to appear in Halo 5. He ultimately didn't. And this feels very much like a sort of filling in the gaps between that. And before, I guess, we get into it in a more blow-by-blow standpoint, what was everyone's high-level thoughts about it?
Well, I'll say I genuinely enjoyed this. It was not what I was expecting, but in a good way. Frankly, I wasn't even sure I was going to pick it up at first because, you know, it was kind of, oh, they're going to do the Didact story, finish it out in a book, you know, not the games. I know that's a common complaint, but I was pleasantly surprised. I'm glad I read some early reviews of this, but I think it was a fitting end, frankly. But yeah, overall, highly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had some expectations going into it. I had some reservations as well, because of my own opinions surrounding where the general story of the universe has been going and the directions. But I was pleasantly surprised at how satisfying this book served as a capstone for a number of storylines and characters and perspectives. And the way it did so, I thought it was very beautiful, actually. I really enjoyed it. It's something I was not expecting to thoroughly enjoy a book like this in this way, but I'm really glad that I read that story, because it was fun. It was genuine fun, and it's one of those little reminders of why I love this this universe. Being a Halo fan is fantastic, read, especially for anyone that's been paying attention and cares about some of these characters and perspectives.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel like What did you think you were going to get going into this? Like, it was not to your expectations in that way.
If I had to say, to be honest, I'm not even sure exactly what I expected. I didn't expect it to be character heavy, I guess, with all the different characters they brought in from the, you know, both the games and the expanded lore. I thought it was going to be mainly basically the Didact just, you know, traveling through the desert, you know, of the, well, I guess what we find out eventually is the domain, but I think that's the best way I can put it. I didn't expect it to have all the characters that it did, and touch on all the story beats that it did.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think probably, I assumed, all right, this is a good sequel from Halo 4 and Halo Escalation. I assumed that. I didn't realize that this was going to be as much a follow-up to the Forerunner trilogy, I guess. I regret not reading Silentium before this, even though it's kind of a joke that we always talk about. They have the previously in Halo stuff in these books to try and get you minimally up to speed. This is like previously in Halo throughout. Like, you've got the entire Forerunner trilogy, then they do Halo 4. Halo 5 gets covered too. It gets explained to multiple characters throughout. It's way heavier in that, and then it goes back and does a lot of flashbacks to events that we get referred to in Silentium, but didn't get a close look at. And I wish I had read it beforehand just so I would have little remembered some of that. I was like, did they cover that like exactly like this?
Well, I'm sure we'll get to it, but I think I had the exact same thought when you were reading. I was like, man, I really wish I had gone back and read the Forerunner trilogy on this specifically for one part of that novel. So I know exactly what you mean.
And it also, in some ways, I think when we talked about Silentium way back when, it talked about how it sort of felt like, all right, this, if you were going to end the franchise with this book, it would have like this sense of full circle or everything's tied up. And I don't think this has that similar sense of finality, but it does have a lot of like, hey, remember that loose end? Let's wrap it up. Like, let's tie a bunch of stuff together. Things that you were hoping for answers for, some things that you didn't think you would. It definitely shades a lot of previous events in a new dimension, which we'll talk about as we go to, which sometimes I had issues with. But it's definitely kind of like Point of Light and Renegades and stuff. We're wrapping up a bunch of stuff with the Librarian and Chakas in 343. This is wrapping up the Didact, but also the Warden Eternal, stuff about the Domain. And I think sets some of that stuff up, or I guess takes it off the table might be a better way of thinking about it for the future games. So it'll be interesting. And I think especially in terms of the whole Reclaimer saga and the Mantle, it has things to say about that and sort of like being a final word, which is interesting. Be curious to see how much of that is reflected in future stuff then.
I think it's fantastic how it both acts as a greatest hit sort of montage of the different story beats from the past that leads up to it. At the same time, it does fill in the potholes. It does expand on the unanswered questions that are left hanging and picks up those little trails and gives answers where sometimes it doesn't need to, but it just keeps going. And yeah, that's one thing I've... Sorry, go ahead.
No, that was something I noticed that in some places I felt like I wrote down notes like, did this introduce more issues where before I didn't have questions actually? I wasn't entirely sure, but I'll get to that. But sorry, continue.
But the one thing that it does more confidently than possibly anything else that they've done recently is that they go head on to the things that we want them to go head on into. They answer, they visit things, they visit people, they do the things that we've been asking and begging them to do. And they've been very, very reluctant over the years to sort of do this. And it's a joy to see them do it so confidently. Like chapter after chapter, it just keeps going. And I felt really excited about that because I was like, what's going to happen next? Not in a sort of ignorant way, but that is a more of a excited expectation. Like I couldn't wait to see what was happening next or where it was going to take me next. Especially when it comes to things like the Grave Mind and all the precursor stuff, and just really chewing the fat, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And I do think the downside, and it's not really fair to Gay here, is that this, in an ideal world, I think this would have been written by Greg Bear.
Heck yeah. Unfortunately, I can see that.
He passed away. And so it's a shame just because there's a lot of stuff here that harkens back to the Forerunner trilogy and is sort of like a mysterious, inscrutable, it's functionally magic for us because even like the Forerunners don't understand it, that kind of stuff. And it had a very specific mood. And I don't necessarily think Gay is even trying to ape that, but it also, I think some of the stuff would have worked a bit better with Bear's touch to it. Just because there's a lot of, this is all just happening in a weird world where the rules don't matter. And like it's things act like they're in real life, but they're not. And there's this, the whole level of, you just kind of have to go along with this weird, almost like dream logic stuff to about of it. And I think that's always been an issue with when you're comparing the Forerunner trilogy to the modern military sci-fi stuff. It's very different. In some ways, it doesn't quite mesh.
I think she honored his legacy very well. I mean, I agree that this is, you know, probably something that would have been written by him if Bear was still around. But in my opinion, honestly, like trying to read through some of the Forerunner trilogy, it was kind of a slog at times just because it gets so hard into the sci-fi, describing the environments and all of this stuff. And I think It's not for me personally. I mean, you know, I just kind of want to get to the story, and, you know, not necessarily describing these worlds and, you know, the technology and all that. So I think it was a much better read, I think, the way Kelly Gay penned this novel as opposed to Greg Bear. But that's not necessarily a, you know, any detriment to Greg. It was kind of a slog reading those novels sometimes.
No, definitely. Like he definitely took the time to world build as he went. And I thought those books were very different in tone and texture from all their Halo literature at the time. And I think that was definitely what he would have brought to the table. And definitely that tone and flavor is still there, but it's more of an echo because we're using so much of the world that he built. If that makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so I'll just kind of walk through it. Starts with the Didact being, he's just suffering amnesia. I wrote in my notes that he saw the Halo 5 teaser and took inspiration from Poncho Chief. It was the beginning introduction of him running around, like kind of in a skeletal form, not knowing what's going on in these weird dunes. Reminded me very much of that.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that had those thoughts.
And harkens back to that those Halo 5 what do you call it, concept art, where he was in a poncho and kind of skeleton. So I like that you know, and we'll get to this. So like, seems like she's drawn from. It would have been great to think that she picked up on the stuff herself, but I'm sure 343 had some guiding hand in this. But I'm sure, you know, it was great to see that, you know, some of these concept arts are kind of things that never made it into the games or the war are being explored here. So yeah, I definitely picked up on that when he was, you know, walking around in this poncho, because I assume I never read the comics, so I don't think that was ever a part of Escalation when he quote unquote died or was composed.
Yeah. Just got wiped.
Right.
And the early part is mostly just him wandering around and little bits start filtering back in. Like remembers, oh, I know those birds, or like I'm dead, or if not dead, this isn't real. And he sees something on the horizon, which he heads to. And then throughout this beginning part, we get a lot of the, I'd love to know, I should have like just done a little quick much, how much of this is flashbacks or retelling events, because we get a lot of flashbacks to stuff we've had referred to but have not seen. So, for instance, he comes across the War Sphinxes, which we haven't really seen, I think, since Cryptum, and has a flashback to when all his kids died in the Human Forerunner War. We knew that happened. We never got a real close detail. Same with the siege of Fonhakor.
Yeah, the perspectives are just fantastic. Like, these are things that we've known about, we've referenced, but we've never had that perspective. And it was just unexpected, like genuinely unexpected in a pleasant way.
And yeah, I think it adds to, you know, the Didact's quote-unquote insanity in Halo 4, why he hates humanity so much. I think that really, it helps, like I think you said before, Danny, like kind of fill in some of these blanks from, you know, especially the games, like you don't really necessarily truly understand their motivations, but this definitely helps fill in some of those blanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we get, like his memory starts recovering, and we get a lot of this is the previously in Halo section, where we get basically the entire, throughout this book, the entire Forerunner trilogy just retold, except all from the Didact's perspective, like him going into the Cryptum, his talking with the human general Forcenzo, meeting the Timeless One, his exile. I wrote down a little detail here that is totally unnecessary and hilarious to me, is that they describe Faber as like he's the Chad of the Forerunners, and he likes perfume in his armor. He's a fancy boy.
Oh, that's too good. That is too good.
Yeah. And we get and I thought like one of the, in some ways this is, I was saying to my girlfriend Channing that this might have been a better book to introduce her to than the previous one, because there's a lot of background, but they do retell you plot of three books and two games in a way that kind of loses the poetry of reading Bear stuff, but also it's way more straightforward to follow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It would have been interesting. What if?
Yeah, and that's one of those, one of the reasons why I was still like, oh, I should have read Silent Shin, because sometimes I wasn't sure if things had been covered in that, just because it's told in a from a different perspective, and I wasn't sure if, like, oh, this just got alluded to, we never actually got the scene, or there are a few places where they basically do lift verbatim, but for the most part, I think it's new scenes of stuff that we got related to us. And I think this early part is good because obviously the dad acts a villain, but he doesn't think he's doing villainous things, how good villains usually are. So it makes you consider the Didex plan against the librarians and sort of see his side of things, which you don't really get in any of the other stuff. And certainly they don't really set that up in Halo 4 because you're the humans beating the big bad alien.
Yeah, there's definitely a lack of subtlety to the villain role in Halo 4 for sure. But no, this is definitely the sort of fleshing out that you would hope and to expect that we've gotten a lot sooner. But we're very glad to see it here, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And it brings you up to speed through the Forerunner trilogy to Halo 4 and Escalation. And at that point, he realizes finally who he is. And I appreciate that immediately, as soon as he figures out his identity, he's back to his old plans of domination. He's like, well, I'm dead, but that's never going to stop me. He's quite the optimist in some ways.
He's definitely motivated. He's definitely motivated.
They lay it on a bit thick, but you got some character work to do. And the far-off beacon he sees in the distance turns out to be a representation of the spire on the Ark that marks where Mendicant Bias's tomb was, which goes back to the secret, like, it wasn't... I think it's included in later versions, but wasn't included in the original version of Silentium. It was like an audiobook excerpt, and then the audiobook excerpt or something in the book led to an special long, like, director's cut version of that audio thing, which had the trial and burial of Mendicant Bias. So it's something that's, again, tying to some of that deep lore. Surprisingly, Mendicant Bias doesn't really come up here. Mendicant or Offensive, they reference them, but they are...
Yeah, I was kind of expecting to pop up at some point, but they didn't.
Well, I mean, technically, the very end of the book is him, right? So, I mean, even though it's just, what, a couple lines, but maybe jumping ahead of ourselves.
Oh, yeah. They do quote him at the end, Offensive Bias.
Right.
And a line gets drawn between Mendicant Bias, the Didact, and Cortana, which comes up thematically. But I guess it's just, this is already stuffed with so many characters. It's not surprising. including Heruspice, who I had totally forgotten about. It was one of those things like, oh yeah, this was in Silentium. Mm-hmm. These are like the custodians of the domain and stuff, and they hung out with the catalogs and was part of the whole setup for that. And he sort of fills in the Didact that he's in sort of the borderlands of the domain. And there's some hippy dippy timey wimey stuff that things don't make sense here, et cetera, et cetera. This entire throughout the book, like, there's very little, I guess, passage of time. Like, a lot of stuff happens, and clearly large swaths of time happen because we get through the events of two whole games in like a year or something. It doesn't really impact this, and I think that's part of the point of it's in its own world, cut off from real time.
Mm.
The Didact goes to a void, that's the path to the domain, but the domain can't get through, and it's, I was very surprised that the Warden Eternal pops up, says he can't go, and then yeets him out of the map. And he's actually a real character in this, as opposed to Halo 5, where he primarily just exists as a boss fight, so I appreciated that.
I like how they colored in his reappearances, because that was quite frustrating playing through that game, whenever he kept coming the fucking back and doing the same fight over and over again. So I thought they used his reappearance very well and explained it. I thought that was quite fun, actually.
Yeah, agreed. And so, and jumping back to map, just wanted to point that out. I'm sure you guys know, but I just figured I'd point it out. But this tower that he's going to is basically the tower from, is it called Epitaph in Halo 3? The multiplayer map?
Mm-hmm.
Which has offensive bias hanging out in hologram form and stuff.
Which was recently revealed, because I think there was a fan theory for years, and at some point 343 came out and semi-confirmed it or fully confirmed it, I'm not sure, but I thought that was a really nice touch.
Yeah, if you broke out of the map's actually a very small map, but if you break out of it, it's very self-contained, but if you break out of it, you can actually see it's perched on top of a huge tower, like Sandy's our area.
Mm-hmm. And we get, at some point around here, we finally get explanation, because in the Halo 5, all you get is like, oh, he's not an AI from, I think, Exuberant Witness. I'm like, I thought you knew that. And here we actually get his origins, that he's basically the remains of all the other Haruspi. And that he's sort of sealed off the domain as opposed to what should have happened. We learn that the Didact also he picked up a copy of some of the other Halo novels and stuff, so he's kept up on things, which we got like dribs and drabs of, I think, the catalog posts on Waypoint and stuff that explained this, that basically he had also read the rest of the Forerunner trilogy and gotten the POV stuff that he had not known, so he knows what happened to his doppelganger, the Isodidact, and he thinks that him just like going off to live a quiet life and die is like absolute pathetic.
He's so angry about that. He's so disgusted.
He's like, come on, that's like all you did, and like you really weren't based on me at all. The Didact getting yeeted by the warden ends up finding a bunch of the humans that he composed both during the Forerunner trilogy in Silentium, and then also during the events of Halo 4. They are not happy with him, unsurprisingly.
It's like, oh yeah, my victims. Oh crap.
Yeah, and he also meets the Confirmer, and like there are Forerunner ghosts basically there too, including the Confirmer from Cryptum, who was the old Forerunner who ends up betraying him to the Master Builder. And the Didact beats him up, and then he sort of also info dumps him on what's been going on in the universe, because everyone's been cut off from what's going on. There's lots of explaining the past 100,000 years to people in this, including, I don't know if it's at this point or later, but that among the humans there includes Fortento. How do you say that?
Fortento.
I don't know.
Fortento.
It always sounds Fortento. Different in my head when I'm reading.
This is probably an argument for, I wasn't going to do it because I'm already spending money on the book, but getting the audiobook, because it's narrated by the voice actor of the Didact, Keith.
Yeah, that'd be so awesome.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. At some point, I'll have to pick it up. Same with... I still haven't listened to the audiobook for, what, Primordium, which has...
You know, Spotify has a huge Halo section, so it might pop up there.
Yeah, so he ends up being a surprising character in here, too. But basically, the Didact chills around. He's staking out the entry to the domain, trying to figure out how he can get in there, assume the mantle, and begin his quest for domination again. And he ends up seeing Cortana show up. And Cortana and the Warden banter back and forth. And this is where it feels like one of the retcon-y portions here is that I don't entirely see how what we get in this book aligns with the short story in Dominion Splinter from Halo Tales of Slipspace, which just shows Cortana basically subverting the warden entirely. Doesn't have really any of this other detail.
Yeah, I wasn't really clear on that either. It just seemed like, you know, like how he really persuaded him, just the fact that I guess they both wanted in. And
yeah,
I mean, I was fine with it. I mean, it's kind of like it's one of those things like it already happened in what, Halo 5, that she got in, you know. So I mean, it didn't really click with me, but I didn't mind it so much because I mean, it's something that's already happened anyway. I didn't really understand that persuasion.
Yeah, I think it makes a little more sense here than it did in Dominion Splinter, which is, to be fair, also a very, I guess you could say, impressionistic thing. I don't think it's entirely supposed to be treated as like the gospel, essentially. But the explanation of like, oh, he gets something out of it too, makes a lot more sense than just, oh, I took him over and it's fine. Once again, like Cortana just beating all these foreigner AIs constantly feels a little weird. And I think also the stuff we get here feels a lot more like the quote-unquote real Cortana. We get a lot more of like her banter and ribbing and stuff, and her wit throughout, which I think is just a more enjoyable side of her that we didn't get as much of, and especially Halo 5 and Infinite.
It should have been in the games. Should have been in the games, like, for fuck's sake. That's a reminder about how much lacking the games were in proper story.
Yeah, and I think that's usually like the, oh my god, this should be in a game thing, I don't usually treat as a major complaint for me or whatever, but this and the stuff with the Warden, like giving him more of an explanation, like if he had just explained his goals in the Halo 5, I felt like that would have made sense. And I guess we'll get to it later. Just there's one or two things here. And like, all right, this could have been the game. And I think it would have made it both the game better and it still would have worked here.
Which part?
Oh, we'll get to it at the end.
Okay.
But,
dang it.
Yeah. We learned that the important things that the librarian did make it to the domain. She was not locked out. And we get, we do get a detail that the didact like tries for the domain the same time the Cortana, and he gets in it, and the description of it again aligns with the vision we see of Cortana to Master Chief in Halo 5. It's like sort of like this dark, stormy, damaged world. After just having seen the Rise of Skywalker the first time, it's kind of like just reminds me of Exegol and the
Exegol.
It's just stormy and dark and weird and misty for some reason.
That's a fair comparison.
Although it does have a reason why that we get later. But first, we've got more flashbacks, because the didact gets sent into his past. And this is actually something I had never really thought about, that you don't... He's just, like, all the details we got of the didact is like, oh, he was a great warrior, and that's about it. And this is the first time we get details of his childhood and his past. And of course, it's a tragic backstory that his parents were rebels in a conflict I do not believe we've ever heard about before. And they, as the builders are started concentrating their power amongst the Wraiths, and her parents, for rebelling, get wiped from the record and their planet obliterated. So no half measures there. And
with the suppressor, no less.
The super cool new weapon, the suppressor, which I thought was a nice little touch too. Has a very like, we're gonna use the wonders of electricity to kill you kind of feeling to it.
Right, and again, going back to, you know, not to go on too much of a tangent, but you know, the fact that they're bringing in lore from the maps, because I guess my understanding was that where these executions took place or this trial was actually one of the Halo 2 maps. I cannot remember the name of it, but it had the big had the waterfalls on either side, and the remake in the center was like this kind of stone structure that seemed
Sanctuary.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just a lot of, I like that. And I guess it kind of makes sense because this is called Epitaph and they revealed its presence at like a, I think the panel discussion was about like the canon stuff in multiplayer maps. So it's nice that they've been doing a lot of that, where I think, was it Renegades or something? The High Noon remake gets used as one of them, like the Slipspace Portal and stuff, or one of those. books. So it's kind of cool to have them go from just neat little places to actually being relevant.
Places that you can visualize when they're telling the story, mm-hmm. if you've been playing the games.
Yeah. You're like, oh, yeah, that thing's. Yeah, so we get, and it, I don't think this is like really like, oh, well, this is why the Didact's bad, but you definitely understand him a bit more because he is constantly getting his memory wiped and put into stasis without his approval throughout his life.
Must be a wee bit annoying. Yeah, must be a wee bit annoying.
I see why he's cranky when he wakes up every time. And I think this is the first time we actually get, like, because the mantle is obviously a huge part of the Foreigner trilogy and stuff, the Foreigners. I think this is the first time we actually get details about the mantle as an actual, like, law, like, code of laws, where they've got, like, 12 laws of making and moving upper and lower tenets of authority and rules of virtue, like an actual, like, when they're putting you on trial for crimes against the mantle, like, what they actually are charging with.
Yeah, I did think that was a really neat detail, how they codified it in the actual laws and stuff. It made sense. It made all the sense.
And then we get sort of the Didact's childhood and like up to where we know him, that he gets a mutation while he's in stasis, so it wasn't unlike the normal ones. It wasn't something he accepted. It was done to him. He becomes the ward of Bitterness of the Vanquished, given his Shadow of Sundered Star name. There's some training montage time. The Silence in the End is the person who gives him his mutation. Then there's he gets beaten up by the mean kids because they learn that he was an orphan and his parents were rebels. He learns that. And then because he's afraid they're going to wipe his memory again, he runs away, like joins up with the army basically, leads him to meeting the Confirmer and sort of the history of the Didact as we know him. And then we end up back in the present, and that's where the Didact realizes he's in rivalry with Cortana for the Domain. We get another recap from Promises to Keep from the short story collection. Not Tales from Subspace, what's it? How the Domain was reborn, and it's at this point that we actually get the origins of the Warden Eternal and why Cortana sways him to her side, because he's got this vision of like, oh hey, like we can let you in the Domain, like we're gonna put everyone to peace, and hey, if a bunch of humans die, that's fine, because he hates humanity. So it works out okay. I did think at this point with the stuff, because it's one of those things that clearly when they wrote Halo 5, the idea, like Frank O'Connor's talking about, like she's not Darth Vader, she's not evil just to be evil. But all the stuff since then has been sort of implying that actually she was rampant and the Domain didn't fix her, and she's just crazy, which I think is less interesting. But and with the caveat, this is all from the Didact's perspective, so of course he would think she's nuts. It does bother me that they just seem like they've leaned into, yeah, like Cortana went crazy, instead of her being more in agency and like, oh, when she was given this power, she was corrupted by it.
To an extent, but one thing, I don't know, maybe if I'm jumping a little bit ahead, but well, she's the one that's sending him back through, you know, the majority of these flashbacks, you know, she's mm-hmm. like saying, have fun in your past and send him back. But I thought it was at least interesting, you know, kind of why she is going mad, because she's so infuriated with the Didact. And I think, and one thing, again, I might be jumping ahead, but I always found it interesting why she was using his lines when she was calling out to all the AIs in Halo mm-hmm. 5, and she was using parts of his speech from the end of Halo 4. I never understood why is she like verbatim repeating what he's saying. And now after reading this, it's like, it's almost as a jab to him. Like, I'm going to use it. Right. So again, it fills in some of these blanks that the games couldn't do, and it adds more context of like, oh, because again, playing those games, I never understood why she was. I'm like, is that the Didact influence? I couldn't place it. You know, so again, it's a nice touch that Kelly Gable, you know, puts on that.
Yeah, because I definitely know that there were lots of people suggesting that the Didact was actually controlling her at some point. Yeah, so the Didact's treating him like Cortana's mad. Cortana hits him back with his own words and ultimately ejects him from the Domain right to the composed humans who attack him. and he gets saved by Forcento, who appears and just starts roasting him, and especially comparing him to Cortana and to Halo, which are two of the Didact's least favorite things to be compared to.
Yep. So mean.
Yeah, and I do like that. Even they obviously have a big character shift for the Didact here, but he never loses his general jerkitude, I think, throughout. he's a better character at the end, but he's not totally different.
He carries that chip on his shoulder the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And we later learn this isn't really Forcento, but like the more about like how, again, the domain has a will of its own. So the guise of Forcento shows that the Guardians are awakening, and he sort of dumps the Didact into one of them. And so he gets to watch the end of Halo 5 firsthand. And then here's another one of those like kind of Back to the Future 2 moments, which I didn't entirely like, is that he apparently was helping Exuberant Witness free the Krypton with Master Chief at the end of Halo 5.
Yeah.
That doesn't need to be explained. Like, she managed to do it. It's fine.
No, I agree. I don't think it needed to be there. But again, I think it helped drive the... Because really, you know, I think part of the heart of this book is the conflict between Cortana and the Didact. And this just kind of helps, you know, cement that, you know, when they meet later on at the Silent Auditorium, not to spoil what we're getting into. But, you know, it's... You know, she's just, he's like, you know, thwarting her, you know, her at every step. So it just kind of drives the point home of why she's so upset with him, or why, you know, she's so infuriated because he did, you know, interfere here. Again, from the story perspective of Halo 5, you're right. It seems like she probably would have done it anyway, Exuberant Witness, but, you know, it does add a nice little touch of why Cortana hates the Didact so much.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. They're having this back and forth because Cortana's so pissed, she sends him back to relive his time in the burn when he was abandoned to the Flood and was captured. And this was the part where I wasn't really sure how much of it was totally new versus was covered in Silentium.
Right, because I was thinking the same thing, because, you know, and they do that in this book too, is that they reference it and then he comes back out. You know, like, you know, what does the Great Mind say? Like, you know, I just need a moment of your time. It won't take more than that. And then it kind of jumps mm-hmm. ahead to one end, but then they go back and fill that in. But yeah, that was the same question I had. I think we were alluding to at the beginning of this is I honestly couldn't recall. Was there that time skip in Silentium? I honestly don't recall.
It is definitely, that was something I did notice. The Grave Mind did not sound like the Grave Mind. Was a little nitpick. Like, that it'll only take a moment. I don't know why him using a contraction seems weird. very conversational in a way that the Grave Mind doesn't usually feel like, compared to his usual iambic heptameter stuff. But we do, we also get stuff that we didn't get, which was him when he gets picked up at a Flood decontamination station. And when he gets picked up by Faber, in case you needed even more reasons to hate Faber, you get the detail about how, like, he's basically war profiteering and helping people get infected by the Flood because he isn't properly sterilizing them before he sells them to the warrior servants. Just like, what a dick.
Yeah, and I guess I guess there are economics in the Forerunner Act, you mean?
I was wondering, like, why do this? Like, what's... It was so weird. The motivation wasn't entirely clear. Why would he be just making money on the side?
Your species is facing extinction, and you're...
making money on the side. Yeah,
the political cartoon. It's like, yes, we destroyed the planet, but for a small period of time, we generated a lot of value for our stockholders.
So bizarre.
Yeah, there was more foreigner economic stuff in this than I thought. Which I guess it makes a certain amount of sense to some degree. But
yeah, and the other thing, again, because I haven't read Silentium. Because I remember he goes into the burn in that novel, and there's a time jump. I don't recall where it picks up. Because did we not get that with him getting picked up by Faber? I thought we did get that.
We get some of it, but I don't think they have the actual scenes. It's all relayed testimony kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we get the actual explanation that of like that he tried to destroy the ship and he was plucked off it by the Grave Mind.
Right.
I think. Yeah, so we get a lot more dialogue between Faber and Didact. I think, again, we get the detail Faber tells everyone else in Silentium. Oh, the Didact is crazy. He, like, threatened me with his with the voices of my assimilated family and stuff. Here we see it, and it's definitely horrifying.
Yeah. Great scene, by the way. Absolutely, like, peak villain moment. You know, that I thought that was very well done.
And I think they don't necessarily answer the question, but it seems like the implication is somehow the Grave Mind tracked the Didact after he released him and used him to figure out where the Greater Ark was, and that's how they showed up. Because he's interrogating the Didact, asking about where the Ark is when he has him, and then they show up really quickly after he arrives there. It's sort of the implication, even though the Grave Mind isn't sure if he, or the Didact isn't sure if he has. And then we also get, here's another part where it feels like a slight retcon, or at least, I guess it's just a difference of perspective, is that the Didact says he's resigned to the Halo Ray being fired, and that him composing everyone was sort of like a post-war solution versus trying to defeat the Flood, and that he let the Librarian take him out and put him in a cryptum, which definitely is not what the Terminals and Silentium imply.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's... It doesn't feel to me like... Maybe it's like a ad hoc post-rationalization. It doesn't feel like something he would do. Like, just give up and like, oh, well, after the universe gets wiped, I'll enforce the mantle this way. I don't know. It just doesn't feel entirely... I didn't, again, like, why was this changed or massaged? It didn't seem necessary,
it's
really.
It's a bit with the story, I guess, you know. I think that's the only real reason, you know, right? I mean, they got to have a happy ending at the end, so I think it kind of feeds into that, in my opinion.
Okay, that's a fair point.
I'm not sure if I'm jumping ahead, because I know they say that, you know, Didact can have a moment of your time. It jumps around, so I don't know if we're at the conversation with the Grave Mind yet.
Well, we can talk about it now.
Yeah. All right, so I can pull it up. I had to highlight it, but when he basically reveals the mantle or the test, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did not read that as a hunt is gospel. I read that as the Grave Mind telling half truths, or, you know, twisting the truth, you know, as he does for the logic plague, you know, even on organic beings, like, because he basically said, I mean, I can pull up the quote right now, but he basically says, the mantle is the final test is the mantle, and all species fail it. We will, you know, humanity will fail it, and we will consume them when they are ripe and ready. Did you guys take that as gospel, or did you kind of take a step back to think about that?
To me, there's a lot of wiggle room. Like, 343 loves nothing if not wiggle room. But I think they've never really clarified, and just because we've seen small bits of, like, oh, precursors who aren't crazy nut jobs who are trying to destroy the entire universe, it's definitely the Primordials and the Grave Mind's idea of the mantle. I don't necessarily think it was the precursors. On the other hand, you can say, oh, well, the Grave Mind's attitude of, like, well, we made you, we can unmake you whenever we want, also feels very much like a just the Foreigner's hubris taken to the extreme, because they controlled the Foreigners too and the humans. It's kind of up in the air. I think certainly the Primordial thinks it's true. That's their attitude.
That makes sense. If that is legitimate, it just kind of takes away from the mysticism of, you know, like, what the final test is. You know, I always thought that was a great mystery that keeps lingering, but to have it answered that way just kind of feels unfulfilling if that's actually true. And, you know, I don't know, it when I read that, I'm like, I don't 100% believe that, like, that's actually what the test is, but who knows.
But don't forget as well that from the Grave Mind and from that perspective, there's a lot of, from a certain point of view about it, you know what I mean? You know, it's awfully biased is all I'm saying. It's definitely from a certain point of view.
Yeah, and well, I think the data, because back when we were all applying for the job at 343 that Kenneth Peters actually got, I appreciated that the Didact agrees with me that his takeaway from all this is the mantle's a poison chalice. Like, it's even if it's not like if it's not the whole plan, the conniving plan of the precursors, it just results in bad things, and you think you can control everything, and it leads to the imbalance of living time, which we get a lot of in this too. So that, like, this is basically his turn away from his previous plans of go back to doing what he was doing to maybe there's another path forward. And we get the hero moment where because he learns that, like, apparently the domain is not handling all the new AIs well. They're kind of just running around scooping up things and destabilizing things. So he gets like a pep talk to save the domain, and he goes after some of the AIs that have entered the domain. I don't think we get descriptions of a yellow and a green one, but I don't think they're not referred to by name, and I don't think they correspond to any AIs we know of.
I think one of them had a name, but yeah, not one that I recall ever hearing of
Yeah, like
before.
the only green one I particularly remember is Kalmaya, Cortana's predecessor or whatever, but she's definitely dead by the events, and like it didn't match with Sloane or anyone else that I thought of. So I don't know if they're supposed to be sneaky descriptions of someone or not. I also noticed at this point that we got the second coming of As the Humans Say stuff, because the Didact, I think, drops twice some human expressions, including hilariously to Cortana, pot meat kettle. But so they have like a fight, and we definitely get at this point or earlier, we Cortana does the whole we're not so different, you and I, classic villain thing you gotta do. And ends up having another flashback to his meet cute with the librarian when they were young and dumb. And he sees like a manifestation of living time and the librarian. But he gets found by the warden. Haruspice saves him, and then they go sort of hiding in the dunes. And it's again one of those things where I don't understand how they can really hide from him, like what the manifestation of this plane is. I think that was something I think Isaac brought up in his Discord about it. If they're the problem with the domain is because it's sort of hand wavy magic, it can lead to sort of lazy writing. It's like, why did the domain do it? Because the domain wanted to this time, like that kind of thing. And given that neural physics is such like a, it doesn't make any sense, but it's also central to a lot of this stuff. It's sort of tough. Like that's sort of like the tension at this book is that a lot of it is happening in like kind of like astral plane fight stuff, and you don't really understand how it works, and so some of the stakes are a little weird. But it's a minor quibble, I guess. And to hide from the warden, he goes where the warden hates humans, so he heads to the humans. For Thensho and the Didact meet up. Didact gives him the previously on Halo speech to give him the update, and they both agree to join forces to stop Cortana. They have this plan to distract the warden, and they enter the domain. There's a lot of stuff in here that, like, I don't know if it'll necessarily come up later on, but we learn the big important thing is that Cortana has prevented any of the humans from entering the domain, which is why it hasn't recovered fully, because humans were supposed to inherit the domain and sort of populate it and fill it and repair it, and that hasn't happened. But they use the Guardians to locate Cortana, and at this point she's on Installation 07, setting up the events of pre Halo Infinite, because he leaves one of the Guardians because he's heading to Dosiak to blow it up, and stays on the ring instead, and he travels around places we went in Halo Infinite, in the auditorium and the conservatory, and meets up with Despondent Pyre, who is cagey about everything the same way she was with Cortana. I think this is the point where the Cortana pulls the "we're not so different, you and I" thing. And the Guardian leaves and traps the Didact, but he's helped by the sub-monitors to escape back to the domain, where the Warden's waiting, and instead of getting killed, he's saved by Haruspis again, who's read the user's manual for the domain and now understands how to stop the Warden, because there's like some, again, like it feels a little magic-y, like they basically have like an old spell from the Haruspis times past to lock the Warden down and collapse all his bodies into one. And then they just have what feels literally like a prize fight, because everyone shows up. The humans and foreigners all show up as an audience to watch the Didact fight the Warden, which is kind of goofy and also hilarious. But surprisingly...
It was very convenient.
Yes.
Very, very convenient.
Coincidentally, the Didact wins, destroys the Warden Eternal that is wrapped up. Like, got explanation for him and dispensed with him. There you go. I don't think a lot of people are going to be upset that they didn't get more time with the Warden, but...
Nope.
No, but I did like the nice little touch that Haruspis, you know, the last one, was kind of like, you know, weeping because his entire race was just wiped out. But, like, it was something that had to be done. You know, he understood that, but it was still his entire race just gone in a moment, you know? I did like that little touch. I mean, yeah, I never cared for the Warden. Even in this book, I didn't really care for him. I thought, okay, it's a little more fleshed out, but, you know, didn't care for him. But at least his death in some way had some meaning, you know, to Haruspis at least.
Yeah, and I think they do. He's an interesting character in this because he mostly is like a magical zippity-doo-dah character that makes things happen. But you also, like, he's there in the first place because he was one of the few that survived the Halo firing, and he basically committed suicide because he was despondent about not having a purpose anymore, you know, like finding your new purpose. And the Didact, like, I really for a second thought they were going to just leave, like, okay, like, well, we've solved everything here and we're going to take control of the domain and reopen it so all these people can go in, and Cortana's just a loose end. And I really assumed they were just going to say, oh, that's too bad. We know what happens to Halo Infinite. That's fine. But instead, Haruspis pulls out a neural physics transmission technobabble solution, which felt very much to me like old Spock showing up of like, oh, here, you can magically transport onto a ship at warp from Star Trek. We will never use this technology ever again. But
why would you?
We're using it here. He gets a speed. He does a speed course so he can jump on over to Cortana, where the immediate events of right before Infinite are happening. The ship shows up. The Infinity shows up. This is the final crux of the book, is the conversation where the Didact says, "Actually, we aren't so different, you and I." That, like Mendicant Bias, they are both scarred by their encounters with the Grave Mind, and that. We get a thing about how the Didact hopes, like, even with all he's done, that he can find forgiveness and it's not too late, and leaves Cortana with that. Yeah. Right before Atriox marches in to set up the end of, or the very beginning of Infinite, depending on how you look at it. And then with that wrapped up, that loose end wrapped up, the Didact ends up back in the domain and he insists on sealing it off so it can't be misused by anyone. And Didact and Fortento sort of team up for a buddy cop movie that we will not get, where they hunt down the remaining rogue AIs to, like, bring peace to the mantle.
Which, again, very cheesy, but I'm with it. Enemies turn friends. That, yeah, like you said, going a buddy cop chase. Like, you know, cheesy, but I'm here for it.
Yeah.
And then, at the very, very end, he finally meets up with the librarian again, who, in the classic echoes of echoes and cycles repeating, pulls a Halsey and asks him that it says that it took him long enough, which could have been too cutesy, but I liked it.
As did I, yeah. It felt, again, kind of cheesy, but I think it was, you know, it was deserved. like the Didact kind of came full circle. He claims he's freed from the logic plague and all that, so he kind of has earned his rest, so to speak. Although it seems again like he's not actually going to be resting; he's hunting down the rest of those rogue AIs. But I thought it was a fitting ending, no less.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it's always one of those things. Like, this wraps up so much. I don't think it's trying to set up a lot of new stuff. I think, to me, the way, kind of like with what they did with Chaka's 343 Guilty, they're not getting rid of him, but they're definitely tabling him. You can,
I mean, if the domain's shut off from the rest of the galaxy, I mean, really, how can he return? What stories could they tell? You know, I mean, it seems, you know, it's nice that, you know, the domain shouldn't really, if any game's going forward, it should not be mentioned, other than the fact that it's lost at this point.
Yeah. And like, there's no way you can, like, really, because we got it, I guess we got it in the terminals, but there's really no way of integrating into the Halo games. So in that way, this deals with it and, like, all right, explains what happened to it and also lets it sort of not be kind of deus ex machina or any sort of, like, overhanging thing, which I think is smart based on where they seem to be going with the story. I do. That was something like Isaac brought up, but that he felt like it really demystified it to a detriment of it. And I can understand that perspective of, like, before it was sort of like this weird repository of knowledge that was inscrutable and hard to understand. And now they really, based on what you have here, it's like, well, it's like kind of like a mind palace and everything's a representation of other things. It's sort of the problem of once you show it, it loses some of its
mysticism. Yeah.
Yeah. Mysticism. And like, you're like, okay. And there's ghosts and stuff. And it's always a little tough to buy into it in the same way as the more tangible stuff. So I'm kind of happy if it gets wrapped up here. Cause I don't think there's really diminishing returns if we keep on running back into it.
So do we think this is the definitive end of the Reclaimer saga?
It certainly feels like it.
Yeah, it does work as a really good capstone to closing that stuff off.
I think like with Silentium, it feels like it's wrapped up a bunch of stuff that relates to that, and definitely thematically. I mean, obviously, it's not like Master Chief, unless he gets to like a little data tape explaining some of this, he's not going to have the details on the mantle and stuff, but it seems like...
It doesn't need it.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily need it. And I think that there's enough here for, again, like, the fans who have read all the books or whatever who care about that stuff because it's barely in the games that it resolves it.
Yeah, this was definitely a novel for the lore fans, that's for sure. I mean, I think we would get so much more enjoyment out of this than someone who's not familiar with it, which, funny enough, actually, I had a text from a friend of mine who said he's halfway through the book now, because I told him it was great, but I also told him, I'm like, I think it's one of those books, you need to go back and read the Forerunner trilogy,
mm-hmm.
play the games to get, you know, 4, 5, and Infinite to get that perspective, but he's plowing ahead, so I'd be interested, you know, curious to get his perspective of it, but for lore fans like us, I think it's a great novel that ties up a lot of, like you said, loose ends, and kind of, it doesn't fix the story of the games, but it definitely does add to them to make them a little more palatable.
Mm-hmm.
So
it gives it at least like a more textual, intertextual richness to it. Like, okay, I can mm-hmm. see where, and I definitely like that was the part at the end where I was alluding to earlier, where like this should have been in the games. Is like, even if you didn't, I can understand like, do we want to introduce the Didact and like explain it, but the whole Cortana's shift here makes so much more sense than just being like, oh, I guess it's because she loved Chief and like felt bad. Like, her reconsidering things here just makes that change in Halo Infinite works so much better right. to me.
After having these conversations with the Didact, whereas mm-hmm. I don't, in the game in Infinite, to me it just felt like she just accepted her defeat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she was bested, but now it seems like there's a little more to it than that we wouldn't have gotten in the game.
Yeah, like if we just had like a flashback, like one of the little moments where you don't even have to explain that it's the Didact, just like hooded figure, whatever, calling her out on this. Like,
Or it just or doing the echoes like they did in Infinite, where you know you'd hear the lines, you know, you hear Captain Keyes and Cortana and all these moments in audio form, you know, while you're in the silent auditorium and going back, they you know they call it, is it echoes or whispers, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, why you know why couldn't you have thrown the Didax voice in there, or some of that conversation, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a missed opportunity, but it's nice at least it gets done somewhat. Okay, so any other last thoughts on the book?
You know, like I said, I think it's just, it was a fantastic read, not what I was expecting in the best way possible. It, again, kind of retroactively made the stories of 4, 5, and Infinite more palatable. You know, fitting in, I think, to the Didact, kind of realizing who he is and what he's done, and kind of coming into his own. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a great read, absolutely. I you know, some minor nitpicks with canon stuff, but beyond that, I thought it was a great read and a great finish to a story, you know, that had been set up years and years ago.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's always a problem with big sprawling universes like this, is that you have to wait so long for some of the stuff to come up, but I think 2343's credit, like even if it takes a decade or more, they have been filling in a lot of the stuff. So especially given the reasonable argument that a big issue with their storytelling is that they overreact to criticism and they jettison what they were going to go for. It's nice to have this followed up. I think Halo 4 was unjustly maligned in lots of ways. I don't think the Didact was such a compelling character that he needed to come back, and it was a huge loss that we did the created stuff instead. But I am happy that the character got this ending to go with it. Last thoughts, Danny?
I do wish there was a lot more in the games, because this just shows you the quality of the storytelling whenever you fully get the context and the perspectives that the games were lacking, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it should be 1v1, but there's just so many good elements here that really would have enriched that disappointing elements in those stories and games. It's a shame. It highlights how much of a shame it is, because it is so good. And like I said, I just really enjoyed it. Every chapter was just, oh, what next? What the hell's going to happen next? Who's going to pop up? It was, I've never really gotten that at all recently from Halo literature. So to get that in this was a surprise, and a really welcome one. Just fantastic reading. It's a credit to the author. What a fantastic, fun book for fans.
Okay, yeah, like I say, recommend, check it out. Listen to the audiobook if that's your thing, for that more Didac voice actor goodness. And that wraps up this show. Show notes and links for this episode, as well as articles and more, can be found on our website, forwardintodawn.com. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, and check out our videos on YouTube at youtube.com/forwarduntodawn. Follow us on Twitter. I think I'm going to get Blue Sky and other stuff up at some point. We'll see. But thanks for listening, and see you next time.